Everybody has these abilities. Everybody's intuitive to some degree or other, like musical or math ability. But because of our culture, you know, the American culture in particular, that downgrades anything that's to do with the mind or consciousness, there's been a lag. And I think people are now beginning to catch up.
Dr. Angela Thompson-Smith, remote viewer. Angela, Dr. Smith, how do you prefer?
Oh, you can call me Angela.
Can you just give us a little overview of your history?
Okay. I was raised in the, I'm born and raised in the UK, as you can guess from my accent, and came over here in 81. I trained in nursing and social work in the UK, and that was my profession. I was I went back to school after a long hiatus. I left school early to go out to work, and then went back to school and got my bachelor's and master's in England. And when I came over here, finally got back into medical research in New Jersey with moms and babies. And that was when I heard about the PEAR Lab at Princeton University, because I'd always been interested in paranormal, human abilities, human consciousness, and they were doing some fascinating research. So I offered to volunteer at the PEAR Lab, and I went down for about 6 months volunteering. My research job, the funding was about to change, and I had to think about where I was going next. And I got offered a job at the Princeton Lab. It was the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab. I got offered a job as a research assistant there, and I stayed 5 years, and it was amazing.
Yeah, I think that would be the absolute icing on the cake. What job do you want? This one.
Yes, I mean, it was like a dream. It's very rare for jobs to come up in the paranormal field, mm-hmm. and a paying job. Well, volunteer yeah. first, and then they made a job for me. Yes.
For anybody who's just now figuring this out, your books, because you have several books. The one I tapped into first, because I thought, okay, this is where I want to go next, beyond the remote viewing, The Voices from the Cosmos. And I'm that was the one I tapped into. Seer, 30 Years of Remote Viewing. That's probably one I would recommend for anybody who's interested and wants a background in remote viewing. And then you were also working, I went to your webpage to find out, Revisions of Remote Perceptions and Diary of an Abduction. And that, those your, have you finished those, or are they on the way?
Well, Diary of an Abduction is out of print right now. Uh-huh. It's an old book from around 2000, and I'm hoping to get it republished. You can go to Angela Thompson Smith on Amazon, and all my books are listed there. Yes, here was my last book. Actually, Tactical Remote Viewing was my last book, which was an account of 9 years working for a business client who also gave me lots of personal projects of personal interest that he had.
And the question about tactical remote viewing, can you name who you were working for?
No.
That's what I thought.
I call him Jay. He was a New York, is not who you think, the New York financier. It was a very enigmatic, adventurous New York business client looking at the worldwide information that he amassed and collated, that he then sold out to futures companies and other companies. And he was on Fifth Avenue, very, very smart man, mm-hmm. and very forward thinking, because he understood, he came and took a remote viewing course with me so he could understand what remote viewing was. Yeah. And then he had me working for him for 9 years.
That's an investment for you and for him.
Yes, it was a win-win.
Okay, so when you're working for somebody else like that, does that draw you into their lifestyle by, you know, vicariously, by being introduced to other people you wouldn't normally run around with or have contact with?
A little bit. We work mainly on the phone, internet, etc. And then I went out to New York occasionally from Nevada. Mm-hmm. But I did get drawn into his lifestyle because he was passionately interested in alternative health, human potential, becoming, you know, a better person.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of research on that for him, not just the remote viewing. And I learned a lot that also helped my lifestyle too.
When we're doing stuff like that, reaching out, and if it's done for that expanding conscious awareness and becoming basically a better and more well-versed human, knowing that we have much more abilities than we are ever able to access in this plane, but they're there. And the more each of us reaches out and makes the attempt, the more all of us benefit. So when you're looking at that from a consciousness perspective, are you able to see that we are expanding, no matter what the superficial plane looks like right now, that we're evolving and becoming more adept at using our other abilities, the sixth sense, whatever, you know, however you want to term it, that other extrasensory ability that we have that is still underutilized?
I believe so. Everybody has these abilities. Everybody's intuitive to some degree or other, like musical or math ability. But because of our culture, you know, the American culture in particular, that downgrades anything that's to do with the mind or consciousness, there's been a lag, and I think people are now beginning to catch up and getting more of an interest in these topics.
What I think is fascinating in my own abilities, and this changed for me in 1997, I don't scan people intentionally. I don't do that unless there's a need and somebody has requested it. And I also don't do it if somebody wants to know about somebody else, because it might be none of their business. It's like that's interference. But what happens is when I am in proximity or engaged with somebody, people feel different. And so that's what I was noticing this morning. I'm like, oh my gosh, you have so many dimensions and so many levels, and you are layered. And then you also come with a lot of company. and I'm like, wow. I just, you know, from my own perspective, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so refreshing, because I had not anticipated this. I've been curious about your work and what you do, and had it on the back burner. And when I ordered your book, I ordered books from the Voices from the Cosmos, and it was sent through your company. So I got two of your cards. I thought, well, that made it easier. Okay, this has to happen. But then just the engagement with the person is different than reading your work, and I get stuff that way too, but feeling the energy that comes along with you as a person, it's enhancing, it's inspiring. I can see why your classes are a wonderful work of introduction to remote viewing, but also expanding your own consciousness. That's what you bring to the table, because you've already done it. And so when you're in the way I feel it, is it when I'm in somebody else's space like that, it's like an upgrade. Does that make sense?
Yes, because I have, I've done some work in shamanic, some shamanic training, and also all my life, you know, growing up in England, I had a couple of really strong-minded grandmothers that took me under their wing when I was very young. I had out-of-body experiences since I was a very young child. Then the grandmothers understood, but my parents didn't.
Parents are like that, like, you know, once removed.
Yes. And I know that I have spiritual support.
Yes.
And they often come in when the need is there, or when they're interested. I'm sure there are a couple hanging around, sitting on my couch and, you know, hanging around here.
It's natural for you. I will say that there was a dream that I had. I wasn't sure who to attach it to, because it involves other ways of thinking. And so in the dream, I'm on the third floor, knowing that's where my apartment is. And I'm thinking, well, what am I doing wandering up to the fourth floor? I'm on the fourth floor. I walk in, and this is like the penthouse. I'm thinking, no, this isn't my station. And it's the penthouse. It has a view of everything, an overview of everything. You look out the window, and it's just absolutely, you know, beautiful. The mountains, the sea, everything's out there. There's a garden apartment. And so at the window, a very large, looks to me like a hawk or an eagle, lands at the corner on the window. This bird is about four foot tall. And I just recently saw something about the harpy eagle that kind of matches that energy. And then as the bird turns around, she turns into a woman, and the woman walks.
Oh, wow.
We'll get back to that in the next segment. My guest, Angela Thompson-Smith, remote viewer, author of multiple books, also a teacher. The book we're talking about right now is Voices from the Cosmos, and this was an extensive research project dealing with ETs. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Angela Thompson-Smith, remote viewer, incredible teacher and also author, educator, researcher of consciousness, and in this particular case, ETs, Voices from the Cosmos. But we're going back to that dream. It was an interpretation of basically a remote viewer. In the dream, I'm seeing the woman, and she has just transformed from a hawk. So she's basically come back from a different dimension with access that she had while she was there to information that might give us insight into what's going on a different plane of awareness. In retrospect, that's also a shamanic viewpoint. And so it's a little bit esoteric.
Yes, but we also have to live in the world, too. I live in a little town just outside Las Vegas, and most people here in this town know me as, oh, that nice Angela Smith that lives on the corner. We think she's a writer. She goes to the pool. She walks and, you know, she always waves and says hello when we see her. And the majority of people, that's all they know about me. And that's fine.
Yes.
You know, because we have to live a regular life too, enable for us to do the work that we do.
And that to me is the symbolism of becoming an animal that is recognized and known, where the other, the traveler part, is out exploring and reaching and teaching and working and really doing intense work without having to carry the baggage or that reality, that label of being a certain type of thing. That's what I wanted to get into with Voices from the Cosmos, because here are the labels that we have been able to apply. And it's what we think we know but may not yet understand, but we've given it a label to be able to tell the difference. Because in the book, when you're talking, the two of you, you have a partner who's doing this, you're talking back and forth. I think it's interesting where they correct you in some cases of, would you please refer to the grays, and they use a capital G as opposed to the little g, and we consider you humans with a capital H, not a small h, and there is a difference. You may not see it, but there is, and I'm like, that's where I want to start. When you're dealing with your partner, Scott Jones.
Scott and I did not work on the ET interviews. Can I tell you a little bit of the history of that?
Yes.
It was actually Jay, my business manager, the nine-year business client, gave me that project back in 2006, I think it was, and said, you know, can you talk to the aliens? And I said, well, I'll have to think about a protocol to do that. So I did. I went and found some Earth-based indigenous interview processes. And so Scott eventually came into the picture, because I'd known him for a long time. He had history in the ET field himself that he wanted to write in a book. So the book is mostly up front, is mostly Scott's experiences, and towards the end, and in the middle are the ET interviews. I would sit at my computer. We had five races that Jay wanted us to talk to first, or me to talk to. I put all the left brain stuff onto the computer first, so I didn't have to think about it. And then I said, okay, our first interview is with a large gray. Is there a large gray out there that will talk to me and answer some questions? Feeling very foolish and very skeptical. And bam, there they were. It just went there.
Let me interject real quick. I've had my own experiences, and my own guides have said, be careful, you'll get what you ask for. So be mindful that you need to be ready, because this happens. It isn't fiction. It isn't fake. It isn't a fairy tale. This is another plane of reality. And once you tap in, then they see you. Okay. So it's not that you're not seeing them. It's the minute you tap in, they see you. And are you ready to be seen? So as you're, you know, sitting there going, well, all right. And there they are. That's a brilliant way of saying, yeah, they're right here.
It was quite a surprise. It was like being on a roller coaster. Once you're on it and it starts, you're on it for the ride.
Of the races that you connected with off the bat, is there one that you found more receptive and positive and empowering for us as a human species?
The Nordics, I found very compatible. They are quite different to us in some respect. They're able to do things that we are not able to do yet. But they were very, very supportive and informative, and just eager to give me information, in contrast to the reptilians who didn't want to talk to me. I kind of persisted. And I got some information from them, but they gave lots of responses that I abbreviated as NR, no response.
Was it that you were not worthy, or were not authorized to talk with a kind of being like you yet?
I think they just didn't want to talk to me. It was like we're not going to dignify that with a response.
Yes. Go back to school for about 10,000 more years, and then we'll reconsider.
Yes.
Now, there's a guy I've talked to who's an experiencer from birth to 48, age 48, and then he had three heart attacks when he remembered and knew, and they told him ahead of time, when you do this, because he wanted it, he was done. He said, I just can't, it's not helping my life. I can't go forward. It's interfering. It's creating all sorts of havoc. And then when he remembered full on, the heart attacks were part of that mind blow that physically for him, it was just absolutely incomprehensible. So the shock and the trauma came through that. And they said it was okay. He would survive and he would just be limited. And that's exactly what happened. He has half a heart and he's still here. Yes. One of the things that he described were the orbs that could turn into and present as a full-blown person. And then they also had reptilians. And he's done drawings, representations of what his experiences were. How do you help somebody reconcile those kinds of experience that you have been told from that side to a person who's experiencing it and saying, I don't know what this is doing with my reality because it certainly isn't what I was taught?
Yeah, yeah. And everybody comes into this world receptive as infants and children, little children. Then we get socialized and educated. Sometimes it's just reconciling your personal experiences with your socialization. And realizing that not all socialization provides all the answers. I found that with religion. I was raised, you know, until my 20s and 30s in a Christian background. And I'm not saying that's any better than any other religious background, but I had to really reconsider what I'd been taught because it didn't jibe with my personal experiences. And had to let some things go.
It's a small box. And I think to get started, everybody has to have a small box to work with. And that's, they talk about with a near-death, children who have had a near-death experience don't have a framework. They don't have a template to work with because they haven't been here long enough to establish that. And adults can. We can go back into it and then try and figure out, well, what the heck was that? But we've got a framework. We've got somewhere to stand where the kids are in quicksand. So what you're talking about makes perfect sense to me, having to reformat your hard drive for how that works. When you first started going public and like with your book Seer and talking about all of these cases, did it surprise you how much you had shifted from the time that you began until, you know, the 30 years of doing of being basically on the ground and in the trenches?
Yeah. Well, I've always been a bit odd, you know.
I know it helps. Believe me, I go there. Yeah, it helps.
Yeah. So, and I've always been a very stubborn person.
Okay.
It was not a big transition to go from regular left brain education and employment into this world of consciousness studies, which was really the turning point, because I volunteered at another paranormal lab before that. So this was the, you know, the late 1980s. That wasn't a big transition because it was just saying, okay, this is who you are. This is who you've always been, but you've been in this left brain world for so many years. Now it's time to shift and go into this other world and to learn about the mind and explore your own potential.
Voices from the Cosmos gets into the ET races. You also teach classes. When people are getting into this mindset, what's the first thing that they have to leave behind? There's going to be too much, so we'll need to take a break. I'm just giving you a warning.
Okay.
So the first thing you have to leave behind.
Are your assumptions and your about what we as humans are capable of. We are capable of so much more. And the ETs, a lot of them said humans are limited because we limit ourselves. So setting aside those limits and just exploring and seeing what you can do and not being scared of it. I think a lot of people are scared of what people will think of them, what their church will think of them, or their educational background, their peers. I found that, for example, when I was working in medical research, most of the academics there had personal interest in the paranormal, tarot, numerology, Kabbalah.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They didn't talk about it in their professional life, but they were exploring their own path. So find your own path. You know, you don't have to share it with everybody, but you will find communities that you can share with.
When I first started dealing with my own stuff, the talk around me was, write it in fiction because that way it'll be okay and you'll be all right. They won't think you're weird.
Back in a few with Angela Thompson-Smith, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
Even as a child, I think I was on the shamanic path. I loved nature. I loved my garden. It was I thought I was part of this whole ecosystem rather than just human.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Remote viewer Angela Thompson-Smith. The book we're talking about is Voices from the Cosmos. She also has Seer and several others. They're on her Amazon page. It's okay to be weird.
What I really believe with that is it's okay to question. It's okay to be curious, and it's natural to be fearful. We evolve when we connect to higher consciousness. So with remote viewing, how do you approach preparing people for the fact that we aren't the only sentient beings in this reality? How do we get beyond this limitation of if it's physical, it's real, and everything else is just fiction?
On a personal level, I don't cover it up. If people ask me or it comes up about the book, I tell them, look, it's illogical to think that, it's a bit of Spock there, yeah, illogical to think that we are the only intelligent life in the universe, in this universe. Mm-hmm. Or what about all the other universes?
Right.
The galaxies. Are we it? That's kind of a sad thought.
Yeah.
You know, we're wonderful creatures, but so if we're not the only one, there are others and probably more advanced than us. And they've obviously visited us in the past because there are all these myths and stories and
yes,
current stories. So how can you say that they are not around? Because there's been this atmosphere of ridicule up until this last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime it was reported on the news that somebody had seen something, it was like the you know, the X-Files music and it'll
yes,
talk about little green men, you know.
Yeah, the chuckle. It's shaming, and it's meant to make whoever reported it less. That's destructive. And it's self-destructive to our own species to keep putting that in that box. But all it tells you is that whoever is doing the story is uncomfortable. Basically, bottom line.
But it's changing. There's a lot of information and confirmation now coming out about that. No longer any ridicule. The To the Stars movement is really pushing for disclosure, and it's a new era. People are waking up and going, oh, well, maybe all this is real.
What I understand and what I have noticed is that the more money somebody has behind this, the more they are beyond ridicule, beyond shaming, and beyond being interested in any of that in the first place, because they know where they're going. One of those guys is Robert Bigelow. Have you worked with him?
Yes. I worked with him for a couple of years when I first came to Las Vegas. He's interested in, of course, UFOs, ETs, the paranormal, human consciousness. And I was his research coordinator for a couple of years. But then I had a family and went back to school, started writing my books.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fascinating man. He's this thinker, advanced thinker.
He had a leg up because of the fact that his grandparents that saw a UFO. And so as a child, somebody making that a real case scenario for him, then he was way ahead of everybody else going, who's saying, well, I don't know if it's real. Can we prove it? He's like, my grandparents saw it. No argument.
Yeah. And of course, he's now ventured now last, 10 years now into this new building inflatable pods to put around the earth. He has one of them now. It's attached to the space station. I think he has one in orbit, and the goal is to put them around the Earth in orbit, on the Moon, and then eventually Mars.
Oh man, yeah, very forward. And it's just saying, we're going to get there. It's a matter of time, so let's get ready. Okay, so with that, there's a part in the story talking about the orange orbs. So when you're dealing with the orbs in this book, there are different ways, and they can manifest as a person. They can manifest as anything, and that's what my other experiencer told me. He says, it can look like mist, and then all of a sudden it comes, it's a full-blown something you can touch, and it's real, and how the heck they do that, we know is different than our physics says. Does that make sense?
Yes, because when I interviewed them, I didn't expect much. I thought it would be sort of a mechanical kind of response. What I got were responses from them that had multiple meanings.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn how to decipher what they were saying.
Yeah.
And basically what they told me was that they carry information. That's their role.
Yeah.
They're not subservient to anybody. They consider it their life role. They carry information across the cosmos. For anybody who asks, you can ask to take information. Maybe that's where telepathy comes from. I don't know. But they can manifest physically, but they are manifesting the information that they carry. They are not that person.
Yeah, my experience was the information is stacked. Like you're saying, it took a while to kind of go through and unpack it because there's layers and layers. And some of it that I got had to do with our past history. And I'm like, what the heck, you know? But it was just, it was endless of whatever you would question or need an answer to. Then it could be there if you were focused and paying attention and receptive. So here, seeing this in the book, I'm thinking, okay. This is, and then the light beings are also something I'm familiar with as well. And that's what helps amplify and make my light, my night lights interactive for the past, 20 some years. So I've been saying that we're here. And then the others, the dark entities who say, we don't really care about you. You can do whatever you want, but as long as you're angry, man, we will suck it up.
That's the dark one. Yeah, a lot of people, I've had people email me and say, thank you so much for writing and interviewing the dark ones, because I've had them attached to me for years. And I didn't realize all I had to say was go away.
Yes.
And they would leave.
We have the ability to say boundaries. This is my divine right mm-hmm. to be here, and you can go find somebody else, because there's plenty of opportunity out there. there's no limit. When you're in this space and you're working with these other entities, do you get a boost of your energy so you can make the connection? I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but that's all that comes to mind. Are you getting basically plugged in?
Yeah, it was totally different. This is why I know that they were valid interviews, because every single one was a totally different feel. I had to be very cautious in interviewing, like the dark ones.
Yeah.
And I had to put the note at the end of the interview was, now, if there's anything that's attached to me, leave now. And anybody reading this, do not attach to anybody that's reading this interview. Others like the Nordics and the Angels and a few others, they were really, at the end of the interview, it was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say that I felt energized or empowered. It was just interesting. It was a year-long process.
What I got at the beginning was a way of dealing with it, like there are balloons, and the balloons are all representative of different types of energies, and what you're going to do is pull on the string to attach to the balloon.
That's a good example.
When you're done, you let go of the string. Okay, it's gone, it's done, it's over. That balloon goes back up wherever it needs to go, but you've disengaged and said, okay, thank you very much. And with the string, that way it's not coming into you. Instead, it's I'm asking for information, I'm connecting to this string, this piece of, a line of reference, and then they'll give you what they determine you are okay to receive. When you are doing your work, and you say you've had shamanic training, what part of that goes into it?
It's a wider world viewpoint. I trained with vision seekers, Hank Wesselman and Joe Kuykendall.
Yes, okay.
And they are wonderful teachers, especially Hank, who's now doing the main work because Jill has had some health problems. But they are wonderful people. I really enjoyed going out to Esalen, first of all, and then up into Sonoma, Westerbeck Ranch. It opened up for me a recognition that even as a child, I think I was on the shamanic path. I loved nature. I loved my garden, loved animals. I thought I was part of this whole ecosystem rather than just human, part.
Have you been asked to deal with and they call them elementals, I don't know, the little people, the others who are among us that, get I think, a bad rap for always being mischievous from our perspective?
Not so much. I've been called into clear houses that have been, drug people living in them that have infested a place and they can't sell it.
Okay.
I work with servicemen and women who've passed over through suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that came about, that was not necessarily the elementals, but it's still a very valid part of the work. And that came about by accident. I was just working with three policemen that had been referred to me by the relatives who had committed suicide. And I had developed this in my shamanic sacred garden. I had developed this waiting room where people can come if they need assistance in passing over. And so I'm working with the three policemen, and they were both, they were supportive of each other, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then I went back again. I got called back, and it was full of these servicemen and women, Army, Navy, Air Force, you name it, who had, there are a lot of them that are committing suicide. And, oh, big job. And got them sent over, and, you know.
Once you make yourself available, then on that plane, they see you.
Yeah, yeah. My home, I keep fairly, it's my sanctuary, my little house. But occasionally, you know, I'll feel a tug on my arm, metaphysically speaking.
Right.
And it'll be somebody that come by and needs help. And then I give them the help they need. And I say, okay, bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can't stay here. Yeah.
Angela Thompson-Smith, remote viewer. MindWiseConsulting.com is her website. She's teaching classes as well, and the schedule is on the website. You can check it out there. But we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the ET stuff. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Remote viewer, Angela Smith, talking about one of her cases.
Befriended by a so-called financier, ended up dead in the water off Catalina Island, shot. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew, you know, who he was, what had happened. But with remote viewing, we're able to get the story, get the perpetrator, help capture the perpetrator and tell the story. And we had the LA Sheriff's Office who actually validated our remote viewing data.
Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, Angela Thompson-Smith. Angela is a remote viewer and she does classes. She teaches this, but we're talking a little bit more about what goes on with the ET stuff and her other relationships.
All of us have different perception windows. With your remote viewing, I think you're opening people up to more abilities to perceive and get information in a non-conventional fashion.
The people that come and train with me are from all walks of life, all ages, all religions, you know, and they come in with that one part of themselves that they haven't developed yet. And which is, you know, they are intuitive, but they want to know how to use it practically. So I have a 3-day masterclass where I will bring even beginners up to speed with 2 days of remote viewing training, real life projects. And then the third day, we work all together as a team on a current or topical problem or event in the world. For example, we looked at recently the Notre Dame fire.
Yes.
And concluded that it was from the remote viewing sessions. They do 3 sessions on the last day. That it was accidental. It was a fuse box that sparked and caused the fire. And there was some human negligence involved. And recently, there's been some word coming, some printed, you know, documentation out of France that that is their conclusion now. So,
wow.
Yes, we're having some wonderful feedback on the projects, and the viewers, the students never know what I'm going to throw at them. So I do that, you know, once a month, usually third weekend of the month. And I also have another, can I tell you the other class I have?
Yes, please.
It's, I call it XORV, EXO. And for many years, people had asked me to teach them the protocols for contact, ET contact. And I resisted because I didn't know how many people were really valid or this was just something they wanted to jump on the bandwagon. But there have been enough really credible people now that I'm doing that 3 or 4 times a year and teaching them the protocols.
Well, okay, that brings me back into your book, the one that you said is out of print that might be helpful, The Diary of an Abduction.
As a child, you know, I had these encounters, contact, all my life until my, I would say up until my 40s. And then I went to a course. It was an evening talk that someone was giving about her contact. And I'm going, oh my gosh, she's talking about what I've experienced all my life. Then I started doing, you know, exploring.
Yes.
And so that's basically my story about how I tried to find answers for myself, got enmeshed, really enmeshed in the UFO ET community, but it just provided more questions than answers.
Because some of this is that you are unique and your ways of viewing the world and your template for coming in here, like your religious background, your social background, all of that, you have ways of identifying things. And each person who has this experience, some may be more fearful where they don't have the language to explain. There's a witness of another world is a perfect example where he's in South America and he is limited in being able to explain. And not only that, he's kind of ostracized by his community. These things are for him, they had been a 30-year nightmare, trauma, and nowhere to go with it. Everybody who's having this experience doesn't mean that we're all dealing with the same entities.
Yes. Yeah. It is a very personal experience.
The Seer is the one that's out right now. And then the next installment of that, and I didn't write it down. What's the name?
It's called Scribe.
Okay, Scribe.
It's going to be 4 decades of remote viewing. So, you know, because I heard about remote viewing 4 decades ago. And Seer was the first part of that. Those 4 decades,
okay.
And then or 30 years of it, and then this is the conclusion of the 4 decades.
Wow. Okay. And see, I just, when I go back to what I was doing when I first had my little mind shift with my nightlights, and what I'm doing now, I'm so much more comfortable. I'm so much more, this is just what it is. I don't care what,
yeah.
If somebody isn't able to get it, that's okay. That's their deal. But I know what I have to work with. And so my only way is to continue to make that more fluent and more fluid in my own reality. And then I've done my work. Does that work for you that way?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I am not fearful at all of what I encounter now.
Yeah.
Whereas I was when I was younger. Yeah.
Well, it was like, uh-oh, do I really want to go there? And, you know,
yeah.
Well, does it bite? Does it bite? Does it smell? All right. So if we're going to have to wrap up here. If you want to leave people with something that would, you know, coming from the new book that you haven't included, is there a case that stands out?
I think the DJ murder case, which was one we did for a local client here. We were able to, this was a young man who was a DJ who'd been befriended by a so-called financier that ended up dead in the water off Catalina Island, shot. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew, you know, who he was, what had happened. But with remote viewing, we're able to get the story, get the perpetrator, help capture the perpetrator, and tell the story. And we had the LA Sheriff's Office who actually validated our remote viewing data.
Wow. See, that's what I like. Is it so if you're contemplating being, you know, I guess nefarious would be a good word. It's kind of objective without cursing somebody too bad. But saying that there are people who know. There's a way of getting information, and we don't have to be linear about this. We can just say, all right, what are the dots? And let's build a framework so we can connect them. And that's what remote viewing does. Your work is ongoing. You're not done. You've got so much information here that people can pick and choose from. The Voices from the Cosmos, though, I think is expanding our awareness that there are other realities and other ways of seeing things that we might be able to learn from if we dig a little deeper and say, I'm not afraid. I'm curious. And ask questions. Angela, thank you. Thank you for all of your experience and your work. And for anybody who's been through the abduction experience, did it help you to go back? And was there a purpose? Did they give you with a goal or a role?
Put a lot of things into perspective. So that was the main theme.
Okay. Does it give you a clue on humanity?
Just about our place in the universe. We are not it.
Does it end well? If you've looked ahead, does it end okay?
I don't do too much future viewing, but I think with this new push with the Two of the Stars and the disclosure, perhaps there'll be a more of an acceptance of the topic, and that's a good thing.
To find out more about Angela's classes, get online, mindwiseconsulting.com. That's the website. Her books are available at Amazon, Voices from the Cosmos, Seer, and the latest one is Scribe. I'll post some links on Wendy's Coffee House, the blog. Maybe you know this already. Reality is more than meets the eye. Thanks for listening.